2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Toad into DFS pros.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the DFS Army's flagship NFL podcast, Geeks Vegas Lines for FanDuel and DraftKings. Guys, it's week five. What is up?
Right. Yeah, super excited. Another week of daily fantasy football action, and we have DFS and Donuts himself, Mitch, on the podcast with us. It's okay when we're in a three-way. So this is pretty exciting. We got a little bit of a new format this week, and I'm totally psyched to see how it goes.
Welcome in, Mitch. Why don't you tell everybody hi?
Hey, what's up, guys? Happy to be here. First time. So I'm really excited. We've been talking about this for a while in Slack, and we're finally going to put it to progress here and give it a whirl.
Awesome. Hey, Kevin, were you going to bring up the week four stuff, that $444 ticket and free roll for those new signups?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty awesome. So we had a couple of cool things going on week four. Obviously, one of them was that I mean, the people at Fantasy Draft have been really cool about doing contests for us and all kinds of like little promotional things. And that's what I love. That's part of the power of having a group. I go to these sites and I'm like, you know, hook it up, and they do. So last week, we ran a little contest for anybody who had signed up for Fantasy Draft over the course of the week. The people at Fantasy Draft put up a $444 ticket to enter their $1 million Carolina live final sort of thing that they're doing this year, and one of our guys got it, and it was pretty awesome. So that was great. I think we had another week where we pretty much crushed the primetime slate, which seems to be a thing now, in particular, because all these slates are so broken up. I think for the most part, like, we did really well on that primetime slate. It was just a good week all around for DFS Army. Maybe a couple of misses, but in general, once again, I think we were on, and one of the things I posted in Slack that last week was about the Rams and Cowboys, I believe it was. Yeah, the Rams-Cowboys game playing to the over. And I'm going to be doing that every week. At this point, I'm looking at all of the games, and I'm looking, and I have one picked out for this week. So we've had we had the Colts game a couple weeks back. The Colts, I can't remember who they played against, but and last week it was the Cowboys.
They played the Browns.
The Colts-Browns playing to the over 2 weeks ago when it was a 41-point total. Last week it was the Cowboys-Rams game playing to the over. The Rams always play to the over. I have two games this week that I think will play to the over, so we'll talk about that a little bit as we get to those games.
Cool. Well, hey, before we dive in, I want to point out something for people following along on the article, that we have a scrolling highlight reel of our winners from inside the DFS Army, and our biggest winner on there was a $3,000 cash by Skillful Rob Bass. He's been a longtime VIP. Kudos to him. Mitch, you also did pretty well. I'm pretty sure there's one of your screenshots in there from one of your personal lineups. Was that your best week yet, or was week four? I can't remember. You've been on a nice little run.
Yeah, I've had a really nice start to the season. Week four was actually a little bit bigger. That week five screenshot, though, that was I ran a ladder in the primetime slate, and it just happened to hit, and it hit well. So couldn't be more pleased with that result.
Yeah, another strong week. I mean, we've had multiple four. We haven't quite gotten to the five figure winners yet this season, but have we? No, but
we're on the brink.
Yeah, we're right there. We had the 75s, the 8,000. So we've had multiple high four figure winners every single week of the season so far, and that's just a testament to the tools, the domination station, the advice that we're doing in the DFS Army, and it's just great to see our membership just kicking ass and taking names and seeing the badge, the DFS Army badges just all over the place. It's really great, and the team is growing, and so, you know, more good things to come for the rest of the season. So if you're listening to this and you haven't joined DFS Army VIP, I don't know what you're waiting for. Get in there. We're a team. We're a family. It is a really special place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's run into week five. Let's jump in right now and start off with Thursday night. How's that sound to you guys?
Yeah, that's
great. Let's go.
We ready? All right, let's fire it up. Thursday night, that first game. See, they're starting to really put some of these games on that slate that are starting to tease me a little bit. I usually try to fade that game and play the slate, but I don't think I can this week. We've got New England going into Tampa Bay, and we've got a 55.5 point total. I think it's up to 56 from last I saw. New England's a road favorite at 5.5 points, and there's a lot of green all over that DVP chart. Kevin, we'll start with you. What kind of plays are you looking for? Are you more of a Brady guy or a Jameis Winston guy, or where are you looking here?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So looking at this game, first of all, strategy-wise, you know, we talk about fade the Thursday game. I mean, if you wanted to fade this game, just fade the slate. Don't play it because you cannot fade this game. And the reason is the Bucs have played zero defense all season, and the Patriots have played no defense all season. It's crazy. There's never been a better spot on paper for two teams to go off. As far as your question of which quarterback, yeah, everybody wants to play Brady, but he's ridiculously expensive. I mean, to the point of absurdity. $9,500. Next highest guy is $8,000. So on the slate, like he is. I was actually doing some math. I was working on my Geeks Picks on the difference between Brady and Jameis Winston, who also has a spectacular outlook in this game. He's been playing well. The Patriots defense has been unable to stop anyone. I believe they have one sack on the season. One. So let's be clear on this. Now, Belichick's going to turn it around at some point, but one sack on the season. So there's an $1,800 difference on FanDuel between, and I'm going to do a little DFS math here. There's an $1,800 difference on FanDuel between Jameis Winston and Tom Brady. Okay. Well, you might say, well, Tom Brady is going to put up 30 points in this game. Okay, even if he did. And let's say Jameis Winston only puts up 20. The $1,800 difference buys you up from Latavius Murray, who probably is a good, decent punt play at $6,000 on FanDuel, all the way up to Todd Gurley, who is a beast every single week, right? So the floor is lifted from some backup player with a busted up ankle that's starting for a team that's on the road and may not score a whole lot anyway and is going to play a lot of defense to Todd Gurley, a week in and week out monster this season. That's right. Freaking Gurley is now an elite running back. So Or you could even say from Lamar Miller all the way up to, like, a Zeke Elliott. Like, the jump in salary that you save from going from Tom Brady down to Winston allows you to go from a shitty running back or an acceptable punt play running back all the way up to a super stud. It's a massive difference. And if Winston is at home and he plays the way he might put up 25, 30 points here, and maybe Brady puts up a little bit more, but who cares? I'd rather get the stud running back at a different position. So it's not that I don't love Brady. It's that the salary difference from Brady to, you know, Winston is the play of this slate. He is the best value on the board. What do you think, Mitch?
Oh, I could not. I could not agree more here. I actually, I was looking into it a little bit, and the Patriots have given up 318 passing yards per game so far this season and over 30 points per game average. I think Winston playing in comeback mode, because I really do think Tom Brady's going to go out there. He's gonna slice up this defense. Tampa's defense is injury-riddled right now, and Tom Brady, he might go out there and score 30 points, like you mentioned, but you know, if Winston can score 25, at that discounted price, you know, I'd much rather go with that 25 point quarterback, take that extra $2,000 and throw it elsewhere and make up the difference in points there.
Yeah, totally. Totally. You know, again, if you can afford Brady, great. I mean, if you have these great punts that you want to use or whatever, you know, cool beans, but speaking to the rest of this game, there's just so much goodness. I think, the highest owned player on the slate could potentially be Mike Evans. You know, they just go to him a lot, and the Patriots have not shown that they could cover him. I do want to, you know, I mean, the other two names are DeSean Jackson, which I think is going overlooked, and he shouldn't be. I think he has a shot here of having a big game. And also, I think Humphrey is the other guy who a lot of people are playing, and I think maybe that might be a mistake. Unlike DeSean Jackson, Humphrey had a big week last, had a couple big weeks, but if you look at the teams that the Bucs have played, they've played a couple teams that actually have stud number one cornerbacks. I need to queue this up in front of me, but I believe they played, one of the weeks was the Lions.
And the Giants.
Was it the Jets? Yeah, so it was the Giants and the Lions, right? The Giants have Janoris Jenkins, the Lions have Slay. And what do those guys do? They funnel passes away from the number one wide receiver on the team. So what ends up happening is these number two and three guys, in this case it was Humphrey, got all these targets. And everybody's looking at that going, oh, he got 10 targets last week and 7 targets a week before, and he's 3,300. This guy's a stud. And, you know, yeah, I want exposure to that game, but I'm cautioning on that one player. I think he's going to be too chalky, and I'm comfortable. I think he's going to be very chalky because everybody wants a piece of this game. Certainly, he is very, very high-owned in the two-game Monday to Thursday slate, and I would be fading him personally. And I'm just cautioning against that one player. I wish I can actually remember his full name, but I believe it's something Humphrey. Hang on.
Adam Humphrey. I actually have him written down as a great GPP flyer this week. I agree with you that, you know, if we're gonna play the Thursday night slate, we need to be playing the Thursday night game this week because it's just too good. And Adam Humphreys is a great flyer down there at 4,700 on FanDuel, and he's received 17 targets over the last 2 weeks.
That's what I'm saying. I think everybody knows that, and that's my caution. Remember, the last 2 weeks, Minnesota and the Giants, you're talking to Xavier Rhodes and Janoris Jenkins funneling passes away from Mike Evans, and that's why I believe Humphreys was higher owned. But my other reasoning isn't, you know, I see the targets too, and my reasoning is I think everybody's seeing those targets. I'm hearing his name way too much for comfort, and for a guy that can just as easily give you 3 targets and, you know, 5 fantasy points, certainly in a short slate like the 2-game, I would go away from him and go on to somebody who will be lesser owned because I don't think Humphreys is going to be the focus. I think the focus is going to be Mike Evans and then to a lesser extent, DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, sounds fair to me. Is there anything else that we need to mention? Because that was a very, very thorough game breakdown. That's the kind of stuff that our new listeners are going to start getting on the VIP pod. That for the interest of time and 3 people, we're going to have to probably blow through that on some of these lesser games and focus on the main plays. Is there anything else to mention there before we wrap it up, move to the next game?
I mean, I think you got to look at the running game for the both teams. Very, very tricky. For the Patriots, I noticed last week, even Deion Lewis was getting involved around the end zone, which is not a comforting situation for anyone, and certainly not, you know, running out Mike Gillisley, for example, though I don't mind him. And I think James White is probably the best play of the Patriots running backs in general right now. And for the Bucs, it's all about, is it going to be Quiz? Is it going to be Doug Martin? And I'm really not sure. What do you think on that one, Mitch?
I think they'll give the muscle hamster the lead role right out the gate. You know, he's in a contract year, so I think that he has a lot to prove, and I think they're going to want him to prove it. I do want to riff off what you said about the Patriots backfield real quick, though. I think that the ultimate leverage play this week would be to throw out Mike Gillisley and just hope for the best. That Patriots passing offense is going to be heavily owned between Brady, Hogan, Gronk. You know, Cooks will have upper teens. Amendola will probably even carry 7-8% at 5,900 on FanDuel, and I think he's 44, 46, something like that on DraftKings. So, I mean, these guys are going to have the elevated ownership. And if you can throw Gillisley out there and he gets 2-3, you know, rushing touchdowns or goal line carries there, you can leap a sizable part of the field just by not having any of the passing game and sitting on Gillisley.
You know, that would be a classic, you know, letdown scenario where the team still has the big game. They still score a ton of points. You're loaded up on all of these pass catchers and Brady, and it turns out, you know, just like week one, where Gillisley comes in and and fucking takes three touchdowns, and you're like, what? No one else did anything because Gillislee got all the touchdowns. And even with three touchdowns, because he gets so few yardage, so few yards, like, this is the ultimate touchdown-dependent player. I mean, I don't know how a guy gets three touchdowns and still only scores 22 DraftKings points, other than the fact that, you know, they literally don't even sniff throwing him a pass. So if he's not, and he does not get a ton of yardage, so I like that idea, and I really like that call, Mitch.
It's a sharp call, absolutely. I'll tell you what, when you bring up the touchdown-dependent guy, I remember last year we kept talking about Melvin Gordon and how he would have kind of pedestrian games until he would always punch one in, so that would boost his score at the end. So if you'll allow me to transition to that next game where we've got the Chargers going up against the New York Giants in New York, it's a kind of a middling total at 44.5, and there's a 3.5-point favorite on the New York side. Now, Eli's been like chucking and ducking like crazy. Is Rivers playable going into New York, in your opinion, Mitch? We'll let you start off with this one.
Sure. Actually, I want to talk about Eli here in a second, too, but Philip Rivers, played team total of 20.5 points on the road. Difficult pass defense. I think he's just a hands-off scenario for me this week. You did mention Eli just throwing the ball over the yard lately. He actually threw 70 passing attempts through the first 2 weeks of the season. He's thrown 96 over the past two games.
My arm hurts just hearing that.
You know what? You got to love it when there's no running backs on a team. It's good for the quarterback.
Yeah, I love him this week. You know, he scored 24 and 27 FanDuel points the last two games. You can stack him with Evan Ingram. That's a very nice budget-friendly stack. Ingram's received 25 targets over the past 3 weeks. And Eli, I believe, was close to 600 yards and five combined passing and rushing touchdowns over the last two games. He's waking up.
The Chargers have not been good against tight ends either.
Yeah, I believe we have them as 30th on our
30th in the LDVP chart. Absolutely. Kevin, you got anything to add there?
Mitch hit on him pretty good. I was going to talk about Evan Ingram. And obviously, Odell Beckham's always a stud play. I think you can't touch any Chargers in this game.
Not even one Keenan Allen, huh?
Nope, I wouldn't touch Keenan Allen. I mean, can I be sure that Janoris Jenkins is going to be put on like Tyrell Williams and not Keenan Allen? I don't know. And so
yeah, see, I didn't want to derail the pod with that, but everybody talks about Janoris Jenkins doesn't go in the slot. Keenan runs in the slot. How are we not so sure when he's that overwhelmingly the best receiver on that team that they won't just tell Janoris wherever he goes, you go?
I mean, even if they don't, the Giants have a good pass defense. They have other good corners as well. So teams just don't. You know, outside of the wacky GP, like, why would you play this game in that low total when there's just so many better situations? And I just also don't like – Philip Rivers is vulnerable to a good pass rush, and the Giants have a good pass rush. So, to me, this is just an uggo affair that – even on the Giants side, I'm not going to get super excited. I don't even know if I want to get too crazy with spending up for Odell when I think this is going to be an ugly game. And, you know, I do like Evan Ingram, though, as a punt play for sure.
Cool. Let's roll this one back to you, Kevin. We'll go to the Buffalo and Cincinnati game. You drew a dud. Buffalo heads into Cincinnati. We've got a 39-point total. I don't think it even matters that Cincinnati's favored by three. Are we playing anything out of this game at all?
I was trying to figure out if I wanted to play one of these defenses, and I really couldn't figure out which one I'd be interested in. You know, I kind of like the Bills on the road, I guess, but I kind of like Cincinnati too here with this low total. Both of these teams play good defense. This is both of these teams are content to sit back and run it a bunch of times, just kill clock and play a defensive game. It's really ugly for fantasy purposes, and my general suggestion is ignore and move on.
Mitch, do you second that one, or are you all of a sudden going to stack this one on both sides?
No, I only wrote down one thing about this matchup. I generally just keep my player pool pretty tight and towards the top half of the implied team totals. You know, both these teams have such low team totals, I think you'll still get a handful of people to look at Charles Clay this week. I actually think he is only for GPPs, though, because the Bengals are a bottom three matchup for opposing tight ends. They haven't even allowed 100 total receiving yards on the season to tight ends. But other than that, this is completely hands-off.
Sounds good to me. Let's move on and make up some time here. Wow. Another barn burner of a game. The New York Jets go into Cleveland. And this one might be on Kevin's radar. I want to toss this to Mitch first, because I know the last couple of weeks Kevin's been trumpeting bad defense against bad defense leads to fantasy goodness. There are some green dots on that DVP map. Do you see anything that you really want to focus on in here, or are you kind of sticking with that same, I'm sticking with the high totals?
Yeah, I personally will be sticking with more of the high totals. I think that Bilal Powell will probably be too heavily owned this week just because of his blow-up week last week. And I generally don't like to target bad or even decent players on bad offenses, no matter how well they're doing or even their size of the pie. So I'll go ahead and let Kevin break this down if he has anything better.
Not a ton of breakdown other than to say this is unlike the Bills-Bengals game, which I think will play to the under. This one does have a little bit of play to the over appeal, just because it gave, well, like what you said, these are not they put it as this is an under because both of these offenses are not particularly efficient, right? But neither one of these teams plays great defense either, and sometimes again when two really bad teams clash, actually decent fantasy things start to happen. So I'm not as down on the offenses, even though these totals seem low. Now, again, I'm pretty down on these offenses because there's just no players in them that I want to play. It's not so much that, I mean, like Austin Seferian Jenkins, it's tough to want to play him because he's never done anything really, but the Browns are just so torched by tight ends week in and week out that you kind of think, like, maybe I should just give this guy a shot. And you know, Bilal Powell, you're right. Obviously, you know, he blew up last week and more my problem with him is that they jacked up his salary. There's no way I'm playing him. I think he's 6,200. Like the salary that the DraftKings so brutal with the salaries this season. They're like freaking salary maniacs. So
very dynamic.
Yeah, the movements are crazy, and this guy Powell is at this point like he's expensive. 6,200 on DraftKings. I'm not paying that for Bilal Powell. Oh hell no. He's not even a workhorse.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is a Jets fan telling you that.
Yeah,
just
I mean,
so you know,
he's not a workhorse. He's on a shitty team. Now again, this is a good matchup, and so maybe on FanDuel I might you know take a couple of shots with him, and the same thing with actually Mitch. To your point, the flip side is as bad as he's been, and this would be difficult to play. But I mean, Isaiah Crowell has a pretty good matchup, so I don't know. You know, Crowell has a good matchup here, and he's at least still cheap. But again, he hasn't shown a damn thing this season to make me think that he's even capable of putting up more than 10 fantasy points in a game. So, I don't know.
I eat more chalk than most of you shit in a lifetime. So, to be quite honest with you, it takes balls bigger than I can drag in wheelbarrows to play anything out of this game for me. So, I don't know. For me, it's a complete fade, and I'm just moving on.
There we go. Let's go to the next one.
Jacksonville at Pittsburgh. This one probably does have a little bit of fantasy goodness in it. Jacksonville rolling into Pittsburgh as an 8.5-point underdog on the road. 44-point total sounds a little misleading. I'm guessing that both defenses for tournaments are in play. Pittsburgh possibly for cash. I don't know whose turn it is. Maybe Kevin, since you were speaking last, we throw it to you first. Do you... I know that, look, Le'Veon Bell is going to be chalk. Are we interested in Leonard Fournette at all?
Not outside of supreme GPP plays. You know, you can't get past the 8.5-point spread here. Le'Veon Bell will be a very, very highly owned player on the slate for good reason, even though it's not like the Jags' defense has been so terrible and just been torched by this and that. Well, technically, after last week's Jet explosion of running. They're now ranked pretty much last against the running back.
DVP has them at 32.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there was a broken play. There was two broken plays that led to like 200 yards. The point of it is, listen, Le'Veon Bell's Le'Veon Bell. He's at home and he's gonna torch a bad Jacksonville team. What I was thinking about a little bit for this game as I was looking at it was, you know, people have this impression that the Jags are good against quarterbacks and wide receivers. Is they have those little nice stats against them so far this year. I don't buy it. So I do think that the Roethlisberger to Brown stack in only GPPs, because you just cannot play that in cash. But as a GPP stack, I'm cool with that too. Just because I feel like anytime the Steelers are at home, you got to get a little Brown, Bell and Brown in there. I want nothing to do with the Jags offense.
Mitch, let's throw it to you. What do you have to say about this one?
Yeah, I share the same sentiment as Kevin. I want nothing to do with the Jags, and there's really two plays that I really like out of the Steelers, and that's actually going to be a stack that I'll probably have a decent amount of exposure to this weekend. That will be the Steelers defense with Le'Veon Bell. Jags defense has allowed 569 rushing yards over the past three games. Le'Veon Bell leads the league in attempts and red zone touches. With the Steelers with an 8.5-point spread and being home favorites, I think the two go hand in hand. And I love me some Steelers defense and Le'Veon Bell defense running back one stack.
Hell yeah.
It's not like you don't have a turnover-prone quarterback flying into you either. So
yeah, let's not forget, we're talking about Blake Bortles.
That one tends to really tip the scales in that one's favor. I like that. Mitch, let's keep it with you. Let's roll into Tennessee at Miami. I could not be more disappointed in the Miami Dolphins this year. We've got a pick'em game. Well, I guess it's not a pick'em game. It's 3 points on the road favorite Tennessee. I have a zero Vegas total. Does anybody have an update for me? Because maybe Vegas knows that there's just going to be no points scored in this game. I don't really know. Is there anything that you're looking for in this game, or is this another one where we're just kind of just chucking it to the wind and moving past it?
Yeah, you know, I haven't even seen the update. I thought it was pick 'em still last I had checked. I did have Cutler to Parker highlighted in my GPP article this week. Without getting too deep to the numbers, the Titans have allowed the most touchdowns to receivers and the second most receptions. Other than that, though, that's a large field GPP play only for me, and I want nothing to do with this game on either side of the ball, and I don't know enough of what I like or don't like to even want to touch the defenses.
All right, so I want to add a little something to this one. Right now, the biggest concern is we don't know who the quarterback is for the Titans. Is it going to be Mariota or somebody else? What we do know is Miami sucks balls, and they're bad enough that, like, a Rishard Matthews has to come back. If there's a competent quarterback, and I don't know that at this moment, Mariota.
That would be Matt Castle.
Matt Castle's definitely not competent. So, I mean, but, I mean, if this was a Mariota game, let me put it that way, then I'd probably be very excited to play some of the Titans' offense. And, you know, DeMarco Murray is really, really cheap this week, and you have this bad Miami team across the board. But it's really tough when the quarterback situation's in flux. And for Miami, I agree with you. I've been burned by Ajayi enough to kind of not want to get back on the train. But, and as bad as Cutler is, he's going to throw 10, 12 passes to Parker. And in a very disturbing and an upsetting sort of thing, Landry is popping up on our projections as one of the best values on the entire slate. And I just have a problem with it. So I don't know what to do with that.
I will tell you this. He's popping up industry-wide. So it's not just our projections. Something about the way people are looking at matchups and targets and whatever else, defense matchup, you know, with Tennessee or something. The industry's picking up on something here. And he is being pointed to by everybody. So that's very interesting.
The Dom Station is all over this dude. All over him. You have to make massive salary. Like, he's so much, his value is so much better than everybody else around him that it's not even funny. So I don't know what to do with it. And it's scary to play him because it's Dolphins and it's Cutler. Oh.
Yeah. What are you going
to
do?
Gotta listen to the projections sometimes and believe in them.
Also, sometimes you got to trust them. And, you know, that's been my big thing is I'm not a real trustworthy guy at times. I love Jarvis Landry, but I mean,
are you a trustworthy guy or you're not a trusting guy? Because if you're not trustworthy, we got problems.
Let's see how the rest of this pod goes, hey? San Francisco at Indianapolis. We're going west to east here for an early game, maybe not all the way east. Kevin, it's your turn to lead this one off. We got a 43.5-point total and a 1.5-point spread for Jacoby Brissett and the Indianapolis Colts. Is T.Y. Hilton finally a thing again?
Yeah, definitely. This is one of the sneaky games of the week. Again, it's these two kind of mediocre teams. Neither one is very good at any particular thing. It's going to be sloppy, but I think they're just going to go for it. There's a lot to like here in this game. I mean, again, looking at the home team, could Brissett be a cash viable play this week? Maybe. The 49ers...
Tune in Friday to the VIP portion of the podcast.
He could be. The 49ers, one of the giving up a generous totals, playing to the over, generous totals to quarterback position, not playing a whole lot of defense. Same thing with the Colts. I mean, they kind of stopped to run a little bit, but I think that's just smoke and mirrors. And outside of that, if Hyde is healthy, I definitely like Hyde in this scenario. The Colts don't really have any running backs I'm into, but certainly even Moncrief and T.Y. Hilton and Brissett are all like GPP viable, maybe cash viable. I'm going to still think on that. And then for the 49ers, I'm really not sure at wide receiver who I like. Garcon just hasn't done a whole lot the last few weeks to make me want to pay up for him. But if he was cheap enough, I would probably be interested.
I wonder if Mitch has any numbers on Pierre Garçon.
Dun, dun, dun. Let's get right to him. thus far, he has the 10th most targets in the league. He has 33. He's turned in those 33 targets into 20 receptions, which is the 14th most. What I'm really starting to like about Garçon is that he has 193 air yards and 285 receiving yards. That ranks him 11th and 12th, respectively. He's thought of as an old man, too, but he's just over 31. He's showing fresh legs early in season, too. Last I checked, he had 92 yards created after the catch, which was top 15 in the NFL. I am going to be talking about a delicious/makes-you-want-to-vomit-on-yourself type stack for large field GPPs on my stacking article that will be VIP only on Saturday. And it may or may not have something to do with Brian Hoyer throwing 86 passes over the last 2 weeks and the Indianapolis Colts giving up 23.5 points per game to quarterbacks using DraftKings scorings.
Can we call that the tequila stack?
You can call it whatever you want,
man. You want to throw up at the same time. We'll call it the tequila stack.
I was trying to figure out where you're going with that, but now I get it. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah. You ever had a shot at tequila? It kind of makes you want to swirl it around a little bit. Oh, boy.
My issue with Garcon is that meanies at DraftKings jacked up his salary huge. I mean, this guy was $4,900, $5,200, kind of like seemed a little expensive for the possession type of game that he plays, and then now they jack him up to 6,100. Like, I don't know. It's tough to pay for him.
I completely agree with you. That was more of a FanDuel play. If you look at him on FanDuel too, he's actually the same price as Larry Fitzgerald. And Larry Fitz, he's going to carry a little bit elevated ownership just by name recognition alone. And I think that's a real easy way to just pivot off of somebody who will probably be a little higher owned than he should be, especially with a 19-point implied team total that the Arizona Cardinals do have.
Makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Definitely more so on FanDuel for me than DraftKings, because the salary is just outrageous.
Well, is there anything else that we should cover in this game?
No, I mean, we talked about Hyde. I mean, Carlos Hyde is in a, let's if Hyde is healthy, this is a stud blow-up spot for a player like him. But, I can't say for any certainty, he seems fine. He played last week. He got a full workload, 16 carries, six targets, five receptions. So he had a full workload last week in a tougher matchup against Arizona. He had, he put up good numbers against the Rams and the Seahawks, considerably tough matchups conceptually. This is an easy matchup. So on paper, this should be a great spot for Carlos Hyde.
Sweet. Well, rock the Hyde. I'll tell you what, you got a little bit of the VIP pod taste that's coming on Friday. And I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, and I know Mitch slid his article in there tongue-in-cheek. I just wanted to remind everybody that that's really what we're about. That's where the deep diving goes, is in our Slack conversations and in, you know, the podcasts and the content articles that come out for VIPs. That's what we're really about, and that's where you're really going to learn and grow. So in when I come back here, let's talk Arizona and Philadelphia. So give me a couple of second pause so we can pay some bills here, and we'll move on in just a second.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.
Awesome. Now that you've heard all of that, let's jump to the Arizona Cardinals and the Philadelphia Eagles. I think it's Mitch's turn to lead off first. I've got Arizona going into Philadelphia, 45-point total, 6.5-point spread favoring the Eagles. I'm in love with Carson Wentz. Are you?
I am in love with one of the Carsons here, but it's not Carson Wentz. Believe it or not, the 19-point implied team total of the Arizona Cardinals has me licking my lips. I absolutely think this game is going to go over. The Eagles have allowed 1,140 passing yards, which is the second most in the NFL. And you have a quarterback who's throwing the ball 45.8 times per game. Those two things just line up perfectly. And they have some excellent targets with Larry Fitzgerald, who I would choose to fade this week. And I'm actually going to dip all the way down to a min price wide receiver, Jerron Brown. He's 4,500 and he is playing 94.6% of the snaps. And I was actually concerned about John Brown in week four. And, you know, I should have stuck my guns and I got off the play and I didn't play him. I ended up looking back at it. And he played 100% of the snaps last week. It was the most he had played all season, and that was with John Brown returning. And he had finished with a 23.5% market share, target share, which resulted in 8 receptions for 105 yards. So I am loving Carson Palmer to Jerron Brown this week. I love it. For GPPs, for large field,
or cash.
On the other side of the ball, I don't know so much about cash. There's a few other plays we're going to get to down the line. We have one more really delicious game this afternoon, or for the afternoon games that we're going to talk about here soon that has a few more cash plays that I would rather invest into.
I was looking at Jerron Brown, and what I agree with you on the take, and what he has done is he's quietly become the number two wide receiver for the Cardinals, where we thought it was John Brown or J.J. Nelson had that big game, but really the one who's when John Brown came back in, it was him splitting time with J.J. Nelson, not Jerron Brown. Like you said, Jerron was in there the whole time. He didn't come out of the game. It was J.J. Nelson and John Brown splitting that. So for whatever reason, the Cardinals don't seem to want to share this information or make it like a definite thing. But it seems clear to me that it's Jerron Brown that's the actual, you know, number two wide receiver, the second target, or maybe even, I don't know, I want to call him a number one because Larry Fitzgerald is there, but he's the number one outside target. And you're right, he's coming off a 12-target game. This is not as, you know, this matchup is fine, but the price on FanDuel, I mean, I looked, this was another scenario. I looked on FanDuel, and if you plug him in as one of your wide receivers at 4,500, you can go studs almost across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly can afford Bell and Zeke Elliott at your running back position. And I want those two guys at my running back position you know, in the cash game. I don't know about in the tournament. I think you can find a cheaper running back who will also put up a big number, and that will mess you up in a tournament. But in cash, you know, I don't mind stacking the two best guys of the week.
No, absolutely. I did the same thing. I put a little tweet out today when I was playing with some of the optimizer stuff and said, of the four big guns, Bell, Elliott, Hunt, and who am I missing?
Gurley.
Help me out.
Gurley,
thank you. Of those four big guns, you got to have two of them in a cash lineup this week on FanDuel. And if you do, like you just said, Kevin, it was absolutely spot on. If you do drop Jerron Brown in there at that price, bam, you automatically get them both, and you got plenty of money to play around.
Yeah, and then your wide receivers aren't that shitty either. You can get Randall Cobb in there, who is my favorite wide receiver play of the week, and someone else who's really good. So, you know, it's not like your rest of your lineup has to suck if you do that. So it's definitely a strategy. And we'll talk more about that, like I said, but it's definitely a player. Like, if he gets you anything, if he gets you 10 points, it's a miracle. If he gets you 15, you've won every single contest you're in. Like, it's that level of leverage for playing a guy like him.
Awesome. Well, let's keep it with you, Kevin. We'll run to Carolina and Detroit. God, Lord. Cam finally had a week, man. But Detroit's a 3-point favorite at home with a 44-point total. Is Cam going to do it again?
All right, Cam is going to have to be...
Do you trust him?
First of all, Cam is going to have to deal with the feminists this week after his comments today about how a woman wouldn't understand what NFL plays or how routes are supposed to be run. Did you hear this? So
I saw on Twitter, I saw a chick throw a 40-yard pass all the way through the air to another chick running a post route. She said, "Take that, Cam." I was like,
"There
yeah.
it is." Like, could you put your foot in your mouth any deeper, Cam? Good job. So he's going to be worried about that. No, I don't believe in Cam. I believe in the Lions defense, even though, actually, the Lions defense has been pretty good, like at limiting opposing quarterbacks and all that. Well, they did look at some stats, and they do not seem to get a lot of sacks. But they've been good at just generally limiting opposing team scoring. And so while we saw Cam have this great game against what is, I believe, now the league's worst defense last week with the Patriots, which is crazy.
It is crazy.
But it is. It's just what it is.
Numbers don't lie.
It's what it is. I do not believe in Cam, although I will say this. If we can be somewhat confident that Darius Slay is going to be on Kelvin Benjamin, and I am somewhat confident, although I'd like to see more confirmation of that and this and that, but generally he plays against the opposing best wide receiver. Then on the correct side, and this isn't every side, and Devin Funchess' price has shot up like crazy in some areas, but if he was cheap enough, punt level, I might have some slight interest in a Devin Funchess on the Panther side. And for the Lions, you know, Golden Tate, I don't know if I'm going to be too high on this game at all. I mean, a Golden Tate, fine, but you know, Golden Tate's a very volatile player, you know, he'll have that big game. He's not a consistent player. Amir Abdullah, this is not a great matchup for the running back. Carolina's not that bad defensively against running backs. So I don't know. This game really doesn't excite me very much. What do you think, Mitch?
What about you, Mitch?
Yeah, you know what? I think you kind of covered just the one thing I was wondering about is who's Darius Slay going to be on? And if that opens up targets for Devin Funchess again. He had 27% and 28% of the target share over the last 2 weeks. Other than that,
they have no one else to throw to. I mean, they have to throw to him or Benjamin. There's no one else there.
Right. I guess he's turning into the de facto tight end route runner. Right. You know, working the seam and working in the middle of the field using that big body. He is a converted tight end. But just like you, Kevin, I don't really want much to do with this game. There's just other stuff on the slate I'd rather invest my money into, and these teams won't be involved in my player pool.
Yeah, awesome. If Funchess, like I said, was cheap like he was kind of last week, I'd be more interested. But they actually jacked up his salary a little bit too much for my comfort on all of the sites.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I can't seem to find him on FanDuel or DraftKings right now, but. I know
let's get into something that'll get you guys a little bit more excited. We'll move to the 4 p.m. games and head into L.A. for not the Chargers, but the Rams. Seattle, golly, these Rams always match up well against Seattle for whatever reason. This year they look even better going in. We know we love Todd Gurley. Is there anything else, Mitch, that you're looking towards in this game?
Oh, man. You're burying the lead here, chap. I want Gurley. I want Gurley, and then I want more Gurley. I drooled all over him in my GPP article today. Seahawks have given up over 5 yards per carry to running backs, 18.2 points per game on DraftKings, which is the third worst through the first 4 weeks of the season. He is just an absolute beast right now. And without getting too much into his metrics, at 7,800 on FanDuel, he just seems like he's mispriced. I mean, he's about $1,200 too cheap right now. He's going to be really hard for me not to play in any format. And I might be a little too biased right now. I'm just so high on him that I'm going to have to check myself when I'm making my lineup. So I'm not, you know, I'm not loaded with Gurley across everything. And then if he does, I'm screwed. So maybe I'll look to you guys to help me out in Slack and talk to some of the other coaches and bounce some ideas off with our members. But I'll let the rest of the game breakdown go to Kevin for this one.
Nice. Yeah, I agree with you on Gurley, but in general, I love this game. This is another play to the over every week. Remember, the Rams play to the over every single week. So it's just been that way, and why would it stop now? This is a great matchup. Now, the one concern I have is the old division matchup, but I was thinking about this. And in as much as I hate divisional matchups because the teams play each other all the time and blah, 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 that doesn't really apply here because the Rams have a completely new coaching staff, really completely new personnel across the board. So it's not, you know, in general, I don't want to, you know, play anyone from when the Ravens are taking on the Steelers or old rivalries and when the Lions or the Vikings play each other or play the Packers. It's kind of like these ugly games. Division games in general just don't play to the over normally. But I think this one could be an exception just because, you know, I have this rule of I don't really want to play these division games in my cash, but I just think the Rams are a new coaching staff, new plays, new quarterback, new everything. And so I'm not sure that applies here. I don't like the pass catchers for the Rams here. I don't think you can really count on any one of them or Goff to be consistent, and I think this whole team runs through Gurley. It's kind of Gurley or bust. The Seahawks interest me, though, because the Rams give up lots and lots of points to opposing teams just in general. Now, they're ranked poorly against tight ends, but you know, I'm not really sure that means all that much. It just means one game that the tight end did well. But, I mean, that ranking tells you maybe Jimmy Graham's in play, although, again, I can't imagine being too excited about playing Jimmy Graham. But I like the fact that the Seahawks don't really have much of a running back. If I have to play one of them, I want to play McKinstrick or the guy from last week, McKinstrick.
It's McKissnick, right?
Whatever it is, he's on
rookie, right?
I will tell you, he's on my dynasty team, yo. That's right, I picked him up. McKinnon, whatever. McKinstreet.
That dude.
Yeah, that dude who's good at catching passes. And also, obviously, the usual suspects for this team. You have Baldwin, who's probably going to be the most involved pass catcher. And then, you know, your GPP, Tyler Lockett, Paul Richardson's. And GPP only, like, stacks with Russell Wilson just in case this game goes bananas kind of thing. Because those guys are super volatile. You can't play them in cash. But in general, I like the game. I think it's going to go over. It's going to be high scoring. My argument against Gurley is only that Le'Veon Bell and Zeke Elliott are on this slate in better spots.
Does that make him a little contrarian in your point? And then we'll move on to the next game.
It's tough to say that after the massive weeks that Todd Gurley has had, that he could possibly be contrarian. I don't think so. I think he's a stud. He's a stud, just as much as anyone else. But, I mean, if I needed an excuse why not to go all in, I feel a lot better about all in on Ezekiel Elliott for a little bit more. But I agree with you, Mitch. Gurley is way cheaper than those guys. He's 1,500 less than Bell, and he's 800 less than Elliott, and he's probably his ceiling and his likely outcome is pretty much the same. So I totally get it.
Yeah, you made a great point too, though. If Zeke ends up being a little bit higher owned, and we think Bell might be higher owned, I think that would give me that pass I'm looking for to be able to go ahead and just lock early in 100% of my lineups.
We didn't do our job of talking you off of him.
And we talked him into using more.
Too hard, man.
There it is.
Yeah. Talking him into the all-in.
That's all right. Hey, it's probably going to work. It's early, man. This guy's otherworldly right now. Otherworldly.
No, he's on a hot streak. Well, let's move on. We got four games to get to. We got some listener Q&A that we wanted to try this week. So let's power through these, get to some of the questions and answers, and then we'll maybe put this baby to bed in record time. Baltimore Ravens at Oakland Raiders. Baltimore goes obviously east to west to visit Oakland. Oakland has been bad lately without David or Derek Carr, whichever you prefer, Kevin. 40-point total, 2.5-point favorite at home with the Raiders. I just don't see this. Is this one playing to the under? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's pretty low total to begin with, and I definitely think it plays to the under. The only interest here, the Raiders are a complete fade. I don't know who the quarterback's going to be, EJ Manuel, but the last time I saw him play, he was throwing interceptions like they were going out of style. All right, he's not good, and they don't have a running back that's dynamic enough to make up for that. Marshawn Lynch is who he is. He's not going to carry a game, and they'll take him out if they're behind at all, and he sits there. And just hate him right now. So there's nothing going on the Raiders that's interesting. I do think the Ravens are like a GPP situation. At some point, Flacco's not going to be terrible. Maybe. And so, you know, against a pretty bad Raiders team, could this be the spot? I don't know. Maybe. They should be pretty inefficient considering they don't have a running back or a quarterback that's serviceable at the moment. So that could get some
opinions,
extra.
Mitch?
Yeah, I mean.
I'm just going to fade this game.
What about Baltimore defense?
Yeah, they're not a bad spot, but I generally like to take my defenses when they are favored, and definitely when they're favored at home. It's just a fade for me.
I hear it.
Well, there we go. We bored everybody to sleep with that game. Let's move on to the exciting one on the slate, the Green Bay Packers at the Dallas Cowboys. I don't even need to tell you it's over 50 points. It's a close spread. It's hello, bang, bang, shoot 'em up in Dallas type of game. There's bad defensive spots everywhere. There's good offensive players on both sides of the ball. Is this just where Kevin starts wrapping the whole stack 'em up, stack 'em in stuff? Let's let Kevin bring that one home. Mitch, let's throw it to you first. What do you see in here? Because I'm pretty sure you're going to come back and this stuff up with numbers.
I'm definitely excited to hear what Kevin has to say about Randall Cobb. I was just starting to scratch the surface on the Green Bay receivers tonight, and I was really starting to like Cobb as well, so I'm excited for that. Dak Prescott, okay, we put out a poll on Twitter this week of who are you looking at using, Aaron Rodgers or Dak Prescott, and Aaron Rodgers ended up, I believe, with about 70% of the votes. We had close to 170 votes. If Dak Prescott is going to be carrying 30% on Aaron Rodgers' 70% ownership, I want Dak. Dak at this position at home with a higher implied team total. And I just think the team matches up a little bit better against the Packers on the offensive side of the ball for the Cowboys. Dak Prescott has actually two times his value at $7,800 price tag in 16 of his 19 starts as a pro, if you take away week 17 of last season when he rested as they're going to the playoffs. He is just a phenomenal play this week for cash games, specifically on FanDuel at $7,800. I'm not really in love with his price at $6,800 on DraftKings. I think that's a little bit above where it should be. He might be priced at value there. I don't think there's much room for growth. I'd rather just pay down for somebody like Carson Palmer. Dak is hitting 44% accuracy on his deep passes, albeit a limited sample size. And he also has the ninth most passing attempts in the NFL. And when I came across that pretty much sealed the deal for me. I was actually a little surprised. I didn't know he had thrown the ninth most passing attempts. That's a lot more than I think most would think. You know, they think of the Cowboys and they think this is a team that just turns around and gives the ball to Zeke and says, go. But they've had a little bit more balance this year. And I think it's in the long run, it's going to be good for their team in general, letting Dak kind of grow and carry the offense a little bit more. On the opposite side of the ball, I'm specifically looking at Aaron Rodgers to Jordy Nelson. And if Adams misses time, I'm going to drop all the way down next to Jerron Brown, and I'm going to look at Geronimo Allison at 4,600 on FanDuel. We saw that one start he had. Ended up with 7 catches, 132 yards. Last year he had 3 starts, and I had these averages written down a couple weeks ago, but in his 3 starts last year, I believe he had averaged 4 catches and 74 yards. So, you know, at that basically basement price of 4,600, there's a lot for potential upside if he can score a touchdown. You're looking at 3 times the salary, and you know, a large field GPP maybe in the millionaire maker on FanDuel. I might look at throwing in Geronimo Allison and Jerron Brown in the lineup, and then just loading up on everyone under the sun that I want. You know, a large 400,000 person tournament, you kind of got to let your freak flag fly.
There it is. Yes.
Yes. Kevin,
yes.
Kevin's phrase. So, other than that, I'm going to kick this right to Kevin because I know he has a few gems he wants to discuss.
I'm sitting here scrambling to get my Get Your Freak On song queued up for this, but
He's looking for his flag.
I'm just going to go right into it. So yeah, I'm not sure that Allison's going to play here. I'm hearing things about Adams being potentially recovering in time for this game. So let's wait on and see on that. The other big question
concussion
in this
water.
Game. The other big question in this game is who's going to be the running back for the Packers. And while everybody was spending all of their fob on Aaron Jones this week, it turns out Jamal Williams is now saying he's fine and he's going to play. What that tells me is go nowhere near this situation. Just don't bother with it. Assume that it's probably going to be Aaron Ripkowski that steals the fucking touchdowns anyway. So he's going to coon those touchdowns either way. So it's like, who even needs these guys? One, I love it when the Packers don't have a running back because they have to throw it a lot, and that means all of their scoring is probably going to come off the arm of Aaron Rodgers, and those short passes, and this is why I like Cobb so much, those short passes that were going to Ty Monty before are going to go to Randall Cobb. So he is definitely one of my favorite plays on the slate. I just think he's going to get a lot of targets. I like him. I liked him even more, and it's going to be difficult for me to mentally adjust off of it. I liked him even more when I thought Adams was going to be out, and I like the Allison punt if he plays as well, of course, because anytime you get a wide receiver from the Packers for $3,000 or whatever it is on a min salary or close to it on DraftKings or that level on FanDuel, great. But this is just the game of the week. This game is so juicy. And again, I agree with you. I like the Dallas side of it even more so than the Packers side. But this game is so freaking juicy that I already am prepared for what it's going to look like next week as I'm looking at my my current salary or current winnings on DraftKings. And after the morning games, it's going to be like, you know, 5,000 in, winning zero. That's how much of this game I'm going to have. I'm going to be like shitting bricks, basically. I'm going to have to leave the house in the morning because, I lost all my money. I'm literally looking at my DraftKings thing. Just
crying. It's 10 a.m. Why aren't the bars open?
I'm just going to be crying like, oh, gosh. And then you'll be watching this game and like every Zeke Elliott run or Dak, you know, reception is going to be like, oh, okay, climb it back. Give me one more. So, yeah. This is the one you want to have a lot of exposure to. And I'm just trying to fit as many. I like Dez. I like I love Zeke. I can't imagine not playing him in as many lineups as I possibly can. I like Zeke the way that you like Gurley this week. Like, I'm obsessed with Zeke Elliott.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, I'm on that level. And then I love, just like every other week, that the matchup is good. I love Dak and Zeke together in a lineup in cash. Because I'm getting all of the touchdowns for the Cowboys. That's one.
All the touchdowns.
Two, Dak just brings cash value. He's not a ceiling guy. He usually doesn't – I don't really remember him ever getting like 35-plus points. But he seems to consistently put up between 17 to 24 points every single week. And I like that in my cash games. I like that consistency. I like the ability to have a piece of every touchdown. 27.25 point team total for the Cowboys here. My concern with the Packers is singular. Last week they were missing a lot of offensive linemen, and their tackles, they're having all kinds of offensive line problems. And whilst that is not as detrimental when they're playing at home and in Green Bay, and they got that home field advantage going for them, sometimes when you're on the road, you know, your flaws sort of come to the surface a little bit. So I have a little concern about the Packers. But that said, no matter what happens here, you know Aaron Rodgers is making – even if the Cowboys take a 21-0 lead into the third – you know, going into the third quarter, you know Aaron Rodgers is going to make a comeback, and he's going to do what Aaron Rodgers do. So his wide receivers will do well. I agree with you as well. I'm not going to be paying up very often for Rodgers. I'll do it some, but I mean, I think – the salary for Rodgers, especially in DraftKings, where every dollar counts this week and last week and the last few weeks because they're doing some really, really mean things. I mean, Rodgers is priced above Tom Brady in the full Thursday through Monday slate. And
wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit much. So I'm not going there. Even Dak, I mean, they jacked up his salary. It's crazy. This is why you got to love it. Winston. I mean, on that big slate,
you got to pay down for James Winston. That's why you got to love
FanDuel. Yeah, I mean, you kind of got to love FanDuel. Man, DraftKings makes it tough. I always talk about DraftKings. They force you to take, like, one or two really, really sketchy players.
Yeah, they do.
Just to make a lineup. And I like FanDuel a little bit. I like the format a little bit better where you don't have to do that. I do.
So sounds right. You know, the only other thing I would have added to that game was I was going to ask Mitch about the ceiling of Dak and if he's ever seen it, because I think that the dude has like a Hobbit level ceiling, but his floor is also right there. So, I mean, I love the guy for cash. I don't know if I'd ever play him necessarily in GPPs, but, you know, famous last words. That's why I was going to ask. But Kevin, you covered that. So let's move to the Sunday night game. On Sunday night, we got Kansas City headed down to Houston, and you know, a little sidebar story. I'll tell you, my father-in-law went down to Houston, flown on a private jet from one of his insureds, was in a party suite the last time Houston or KC went down there. He's a Chiefs fan, and was in the party suite next door to Dwight Howard and James Harden and those guys that were all renting a suite. And the incredible story that he came back with, he took his girlfriend down there, and she didn't recognize any of them. And she was just looking at their shoes and going, what the hell do these guys do? I mean, freaking for real. Their shoe is the size of these cowboy hats these guys are wearing, blah, blah. Just the comments that came out of that were absolutely unreal. But anyway, let's throw this one over to you, Kevin. What do you see in this game? Because I'm just going to be sitting here mind blown that she didn't recognize those basketball players by the size of their shoes.
That they were basketball players. So, well, she was thinking elsewhere and just a dirty, dirty mind. So I don't even want to go there. But what I'm going to do
for my father-in-law's sake, I hope not.
Ah, my goodness, what she was thinking about. You know, the main thing I want to talk about here is just Deshaun Watson. Hello, the fucking guy is good. He's really, really good. But unfortunately, this is a really tough matchup. Listen. This is the Kansas City. This is a play to the under game. Like, all right, that's like kind of the new thing I think for me. I'm looking at these games and I'm trying to figure out. All right, Vegas has a total of 47. Is this going over? This is an under game all the way. I don't think that the Texans are going to be able to run it against the Chiefs. Now, I'm looking at DVP numbers that show these really good bad stats for the Chiefs. I don't buy it. They're a great defensive line. They stop the run. Lamar Miller, the Texans are going to have a tough time doing that. Chiefs bring a pretty good secondary to the table, but they bring a solid pass rush. They're limiting opposing quarterbacks scoring in general and just I just can't get behind Deshaun Watson in anything but a crazy Watson to DeAndre Hopkins GPP stack. I don't see – obviously, Will Fuller had his big game last week. Could he do it again this week? I don't know. Maybe. I do like his cheapness. On the flip side, even with the Chiefs, I mean, there's a reason none of us are talking about Hunt as, you know, the guy we want to go all in on this week. Not to say he won't have a huge game. He's on my fantasy team. I hope he has a big day. But
he's your GPP pivot.
He's really a GPP pivot. No one's talking about him. We just sat here and talked about Gurley and Bell and Zeke and Gurley and Bell and Zeke and Gurley. And no one's talking about Hunt. Well, what about Hunt? Well, he's got a tough matchup. He's on the road against one of the better defensive lines in the league. A team that's done really well at stopping opposing offenses in general. Alex Smith, he's been on fire, but, I mean, can he keep it going against a really solid, again, divisional foe? Teams know each other a little bit. Now, they don't know Deshaun Watson, but the teams know each other. This game does not excite me all that much. I think it's going to play to the under. I think there's not a lot of plays here. I mean, every time Kelce plays. But Houston limits opposing tight ends. So then should we go to Tyreek Hill here? I don't know. I think this game is, even though it has a high total on paper, Vegas-wise, it's not a game I want a ton of exposure to. Just these two defenses are too good.
Let's toss it to Mitch then. Mitch, does this give you... This game doesn't excite Kevin. Does it give you a father-in-law hard-on? That's what Kevin was getting
at. Oh, good Lord.
I might have that vomit on myself scenario here.
Yeah, never say that again. Please.
So I'm looking at this game as one of those games that's, you know, just as Kevin was alluding to, it's going to be hard to figure out. You know, is it going to be an under? Is it going to be an over? You know, you have Houston. I think everything's pointing to the under because of two reasons. You have Houston, who had a huge win, scoring 50, you know, mid-50s, 54 points, whatever it was. And then you had Kansas City, who's going to be on a short week now, okay? And they are also traveling to Texas to face this team that just went nuts. It just seems like a letdown spot. That being said, it's Sunday Night Football. You know, teams can get jacked up a little bit for this. The Texans have the third fastest pace on offense this year. They run 69 snaps per game. And I think that Deshaun Watson is the type of quarterback who can limit the pressure that Kansas City brings. Mm, okay. You know, he just with his legs, he's ran 67, 41, 24 yards over the last three games. He has two rushing touchdowns. Those mobile quarterbacks, and I think I can't remember what the number was. I wish I wrote it down, but the Texans had been sacked 10 times in that first game, or 8 or 9 times in that first game. But they've only been allowed. Deshaun Watson specifically has only been sacked 6 times in his 3 games. So even though the pressure is going to get to him, he just gets out of it. He just keeps getting out of those sacks. And he creates with his legs. And I think anytime you have a quarterback that can create with his legs, you know, that gives a player like DeAndre Hopkins or somebody with speed like Will Fuller and Deshaun Watson a chance to create something on the move with those extended plays. So I think it's more likely to be an under. But I'm definitely going to have some shares of Watson, Hopkins, and Fuller and some sort of mix. Probably run it back with the opposing tight end, Kelce. Just because I think Tyreek Hill is a little overpriced right now. But that's about the only exposure I'm going to have from this game. And that'll be strictly for large field GPPs. I do think that with our approach into those 100-man leagues and running those hybrid lineups, I do think that you can have Watson and Hopkins in there just because it seems like Hopkins is just going to see such a large target share. He's currently getting 38.6% of the target share. And he's had a minimum of 7 catches in every single game this year. His 49 targets are the most in the NFL. And get this, the amount of plays they're playing each game, you know, 69 snaps per game, he hasn't missed a single snap. That's the type of guy I want to lock in for my cash games.
You're convincing me a little bit, but
there we go.
We'll see.
Just a little.
Sold him. We'll see.
We're at about an hour and 10 minutes in this podcast. If we want to get to those questions and answers, let's blow through this Monday night game. I don't think that it's too difficult to do. It's Minnesota and Chicago. Another one that apparently is offline because it's showing me a Vegas total of zero. And with the 3.5-point spread, that gives the Minnesota Vikings an implied total of 1.75 points. And apparently Chicago's going negative with a negative 1.75 points. So is there anything in here that interests either one of you in this game? Because I got to be honest with you, I'm out all across the board here.
No, I mean,
I'll go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, Latavius Murray is cheap this week, so yeah, I mean, there's that. For the Vikings, obviously, I loves me a replacement running back play, especially when there's not a whole lot of competition for touches on the team, or if it's a running team and the team is favored. There's a lot going for Latavius Murray in this spot. Not as far as like some blow-up scenario where he's going to put up 29 points, but rather, you know, a guy that I think for cheap dollars will get maybe 16 to 20 opportunities over the course of this game. If he can squeak one into the end zone, he could potentially bring that sort of, you know, high teens type fantasy score to the table. The Vikings defense. All right, so Chicago starting Trubisky for the first game ever. And Vikings are not football. A great defense to be got. I mean, it's a pretty scary spot. It's Monday Night Football. You're going up against one of the better defenses in the league. I mean, you got to have some Vikings D, no? What do you say, Mitch? You got to have some Vikings D in there.
You know, I think the Vikings D are definitely in play. Trubisky at Monday Night Football, his first start against tough defense. Doesn't really have anybody to throw the ball to, unless he's just going to be dumping the ball off to Cohen out of the backfield. But those receivers are not going to get open against these defensive backs of the Vikings. And I wonder if they
don't even have. I can't even name their wide receivers. That's how shitty they are.
Yeah.
Bellamy and Wright and I don't even know the third guy.
I think that the game might be offline right now because they're wondering about Sam Bradford. And I do, you know, if we're doing that Thursday slate and you do decide to fade that Thursday night game, I think there is some credence to playing a play like Sam Bradford. And, you know, you'll have the luxury of waiting to see if he comes back. And you can wait all the way up till Sunday night and then just throw Deshaun Watson in there if you've heard nothing yet. But if you hear Bradford's going to play, I kind of like this spot for Bradford. He's forgotten about. If he's healthy enough to play, I really like the stack with him, with Adam Thielen or with Stephon Diggs. I think it could be incredibly low owned, and just for large field GPP purposes, I'm going to be tracking this one. I want to see what's going on with Bradford. I'm not necessarily a Bradford truther, but I'm definitely slightly biased. I thought he's been a pretty good quarterback his entire career, and if you've seen what's been going on in Los Angeles with the Rams, I think coaching really derailed him to some extent. And that's about all I have about that game.
One thing isn't Sherman the OC in Minnesota? Isn't that the guy's name? I want to say that is also his rookie year here in St. Louis was either, you know, Pat Sherman or whatever his name was. That was why they drafted Bradford, was because this guy was a quarterback developer to reunite him. I meant to say this a few podcasts ago earlier in the season. If that's him, and if that's the same name I'm thinking of, that's exactly who they brought over from like Cleveland or something to develop Sam Bradford. And that would be exactly why Sam Bradford probably took off in that first game or two games against soft New Orleans. I get it. But that reconnection there with a coach that actually sees him, knows him, and whatever else. I think that there's something there. So I like the sharpest play I think I've heard so far out of you is watching the late swap and going into Sunday night. If we still don't have Bradford news, just dump Deshaun Watson in there and hope for the best. But if we get word that Bradford's going to play in large field GPPs, pivoting over to like a Thielen or a Diggs and a Bradford, I think that's genius.
I got lucky then.
So no, I think it's great.
A genius call from Chop is a good thing, Mitch.
It should scare you that ownership will be a little higher after saying that, because if I think it's a good play, I'm not alone in the world being a chalk eater. So,
I mean, my flip side of that is, I like it. I would point out that's really very much a GPP mentality. Like, you really don't want a guy coming off a 4-week layoff and questionable health, like, in a cash game. This is definitely one of these sort of, will have him kind of things.
That's why it blows my mind, because a guy like me wrote him off, Bradford off for dead 3 weeks ago, and was like, I'll worry about it a couple weeks after he comes back, if he even comes back at all. So that wraps up the game section of this. Do we want to get into some of these listener questions? Are you guys ready for this?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let me throw the first one at let's see if I can find which one. Yeah, I'm going to throw the first one at you, Mitch. It's from at Send It Number 4, which is a VIP member of ours. Do you think Zeke fade is a good GPP move? And if so, what running back would you go with? This listener is looking at Dak at QB and doesn't really want to correlate the QB and running back situation. So if you fade Zeke, if you think it's a good idea, who would you go with?
Oh, man, Chap, you actually made this call just kind of nonchalantly when we were talking about that Sunday night game. If you're going to be running with Dak and you don't want to have your quarterback and running back together, and you want a low-owned running back, I think it's going to be Kareem Hunt this week. I think you're going to hear a lot about Gurley across the industry. You'll hear a lot about Zeke, Le'Veon Bell. People are bringing up his 39 touches he had last game, and the Jaguars' defense giving up 190 yards rushing per game over the last 3 weeks. You've got three backs huddled right around Kareem Hunt, who has just been an absolute monster through the first 4 weeks of his career. That's one of my favorite GPP running backs of the entire week, and basically just comes down to ownership and his price point pivot off those three higher owned running backs that are going to be right around him.
The other guys are in better spots.
Yep.
So people are going to take them. So if it's just about ownership, Hunt. But if I needed to get off Zeke just because I'm playing Dak and I refuse to pair up a wide receiver, a quarterback, and his running back, yeah, I might go with Gurley, your guy, or Bell to the upside for a guy who's still in a really good spot, but not Zeke.
So, safer play, stay with the chalk. If you're in a GPP and you want to go a little bit riskier for some upside and low ownership, you run right over to Kareem Hunt. Sounds fair to me.
Yeah, and it's Kevin, a similar salary. Go ahead.
Kevin, let's throw this one at you. At DFS Learner says, in GPPs, hashtag let your freak flag fly.
Mm-hmm.
But now you know why I threw that question to you.
Mm-hmm.
But when building a hybrid ladder, do you care about ownership? And if so, at what level do you start caring about ownership? And like the double up level, 100 man level, smaller GPPs, when do you start caring about ownership?
I don't even take ownership into consideration until we start to get into contests with at least 1,000 and ideally multiple 1,000 entrants. So I'll only begin to really look at, I'd say at around 1,000 entrants, I start to think about, okay, who might be a low-owned play. But if we're talking in the hundreds, I think you have to not put your freak flag forward, but rather put your best foot forward. Who do you love this week? Just get them in a lineup together, put your best lineup forward, who's your favorite punt, and just go for it. And that's how, a lot of what I try to do is really, really treat massive GPPs differently from small ones. The small ones are ones I want to win, but I want to win that with my chalky lineup. And by my chalk, it doesn't mean it's the chalk of the week. It just means, who do I really like this week? So I might get into a, $100 entry, $350-person contest. I'm not going in there, letting my freak flag fly. Fuck that. And I want to cash and I want to win. So I'm putting Zeke Elliott in there and I'm putting Le'Veon Bell and I'm trying to make it work. So I think with the hybrids, my entire approach to that, and hybrid is really, it's this word, I've kind of created it for DFS purposes. And the idea of it is building upside teams, but not really concerning yourself with ownership at all. It's more about, all right, there may be two or three different sort of great cash stacks that I want to use this week. well, let me, or cash plays, or, you know, it's, I'm still going to stack a quarterback with a wide receiver and do that kind of thing. But I'm just not worried or even thinking about ownership levels in that scenario. So up until, I would say, 1,500 plus entrants, I don't take ownership into account at all.
See, for guys that are in Slack that listen to that, is there any doubt in your mind why I echo that sentiment exactly? I mean, you just got the word from Kevin, who's been the guy that's been talking to me for 2 or 3 years. And I mean, nothing original comes out of my mouth. Is there? That's why I say what I say, is this is the guy I've been talking to. So, I mean, I'm the exact same way. For me, and Mitch, we'll let you see if there's something that you say about this too, because I think it's very, very important when we're talking about, we all seem to three be sort of be on the same page here when we're talking about, you know, hybrid lineups and ladders and chalk and GPP ownership and all this kind of crap. I really don't concern myself with ownership anymore in any lineup that I build. And the reason why is because for me personally, I don't get past that top 1% very often and get into the deep money inside those GPPs. That's why I scaled my own contests back to the 100-man leagues, maybe occasionally a 1,000-man tournament or something, where the chalk can go off and still put that score up there that is not necessarily a nut lineup for the week, but it does win those contests or get very, very close. For me, that seems to work. So I've taken all of those great big GPPs completely out of my repertoire on purpose because I don't build lineups that get – it's kind of like a know-your-strength thing. I don't get into that top 1%, that top 10th of 1% nearly often enough for me to care about it anymore.
Such good discipline, by the way, what you're doing with that and knowing yourself as a player, super critical, super – a thing that not enough people do. I mean, it's my whole – it's the whole bankroll management pod all over again. Mm-hmm. Stop chasing the big win. It's really hard to get that, and you hold it against yourself when you're not winning 100,000 person tournaments. But everybody who's in that tournament, except for the first couple of places, generally has an expectation of a loss. It's very tough to play profitable in 15% vig contests that pay out 25%. Or 20% to first place. Like, that already killed you if you didn't take first.
Well, you know, just to add to that one more before we throw it to Mitch, 30-second wrap-up out of me. I built one lineup through all of MLB, one, that got into that top 10th of 1% all year long. And it just happened to do it. And it cost me tens of thousands of dollars. I went, of course, looking at all of the contests that I would have won. I mean, first place, trophy dragging winner. And I mean, 20,000 for this, 7,000 for this, whatever. And I was kicking myself for about 30 minutes that night. Some guys will kick themselves for 2 or 3 or 4 days, completely go on monkey tilt and play GPPs for 2 weeks afterwards. That's what you've got to get past if you're kind of like me or in my train of thought, is you have to be okay with producing that lineup, knowing that you just were never going to be in those contests to begin with. So it don't even matter to you anymore. Mitch, any ideas?
Yeah, you know, I just want to go a little bit further on the not worrying about the ownership for running of the ladders and doing these smaller contests. You know, let's say you have a player like DeAndre Hopkins who's carrying a 17% ownership, and you are using him in a 100-man tournament, okay, or 100-man league. And he blows up, scores 25, 30 points. It's you and 16 other people that have him. And the top 12 get paid out. So conceivably, you only have 5 more people you have to beat to even get into the cash, get to the cash line. Okay. Now, let's say we're looking at a 200,000-person tournament, and 17% of the field has DeAndre Hopkins. You know, what is that, 34% or 34,000 people have DeAndre Hopkins if he blows up. You did not pass much of the field. You still likely have another 20,000 people you have to beat before you're even in the money. So, you know, when you get those large tournaments, you know, I get if you're a very large scale example, but when you have those large tournaments, you know, that's when you have to start worrying about it. You know, when we're running our ladders, 10s, 20s, 100s, playing these small contests or entering small field GPPs, you know, $12, 49 man, We're looking for those safer plays with a high floor. We want that. We don't care about how much of the field's going to have that person. When you're only against a small group of people, you're going to make up the differences naturally and organically just by working on your correlations and making sure you have the right correlations between your quarterbacks and defenses. That'll naturally suss out the rest of the issues you might run into if you're doing a large field.
Well put. Well put. Let's throw the next question at you, Mitch. How do you narrow down your core players? If you have a feeling on a player, what do you need to find in numbers to kind of let you know to play him, barring obviously ownership or anything? So, two-part question, I guess. How do you narrow down your core plays? And then what are you looking for in specific number for a guy to make that cut-down list?
I'm glad you asked that. I get this question the most. People, they want to know, how did I get down to these plays? What put me on this guy? What put me on this guy over that guy? And I'll just use the example that I brought up a couple guys tonight. Jaron Brown, 4,500. Jaron Allison, 4,600. Let's say they both, for whatever reason, there's guys injured, they're both going to start. And we know that. We know that going into the weekend, they're both going to start. You know, whatever, Davante Adams and Randall Cobb butt heads in the tunnel and they're knocked out for the game. Allison gets a starting role. You know, if we're looking at that and we know Jaron Brown has been talked about around the industry and we know people are excited about Carson Palmer to Brown so they can pay up for everybody else, and Jaron Brown's going to be even 10-15%. Well, okay. No matter how good he is, I still want Allison, especially for GBPs. I want Allison. He's going to carry a tenth of the ownership, and if Brown, you know, falls flat on his face and Allison even just doubles his score, that's a large part of the field I'm going to jump. So basically, when I'm looking at my player pool, you know, I'm looking at specific situations. Okay, here's my player pool for large field GPPs. Okay, well, between Brown and Allison in this hypothetical scenario, I'm going Allison. And you can basically do that up and down your player pool until you get down to a group of players where you feel comfortable having a mix of semi-chalky players. You can even have a couple high chalk players. You know, you can have Lev Bell in there. It's no big deal. You can even run Lev Bell and Zeke Elliott in there together. There's no problem with that in a large field GPP. However, the more chalk you have at certain positions, you have to go a little bit more contrarian, really stretch that contrarianism out a little bit more at the others. Me personally, for leagues and when I run the ladder, I have a separate player pool than I do for my GPP player pool. Kevin has talked about this on plenty of podcasts before and in our Slack channel. He discusses it with our members all the time. You know, when you have some chalk and you have some safer players and you're kind of using a good mix and balance in your player pool for our leagues and our ladders, you know, once you get to the GPPs, that's where you let your freak fly fly. That's where you can go ahead and take a swing at Sam Bradford, Adam Thielen. You don't have to worry about him in your ladder or in your hunter man ruining your bankroll. You know, you've already set aside, just as you had spoken about, Chop, in the beginning, you set aside your bankroll for the week and you know where you're going to allocate it and where you're going to invest it. And you know you have a small amount that you're going to invest into your GPPs with your very contrarian plays. And that's about how I come down to my player pool.
Cut yours?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I was going to touch on, the correctness of what Mitch was saying in terms of how you really need to have a different player pool for GPP than in your cash games, not just because if you're doing cash right, you should be pretty chalky with those, and that's not really the ideal approach to massive GPPs, but also because it's a good hedge against your cash games blowing up. Like, if you're all in on Larry Fitzgerald, last week in cash, then at least you had approach GPPs and said, wow, I have way too much Fitzy in cash, let me do something different, at least you would have avoided that bomb in GPP, or you get the idea, but it's really important to have two different pools. And a lot of the way I'm coming up with my cash core is just what we do here on the pod and what I do in the VIP pod, which is understand the team totals, look at the matchups, look at our projections. You know, if you're a DFS Army member, you're lucky enough to have access to the Domination Station Optimizer. So I can go to the Domination Station and look at each position group, just at our projections, very simple, and sort by value. And as soon as you sort by point, fantasy points per dollar, I mean, obviously, you have to remove some of the noise from the rankings, which generally the noise involves really cheap players that are projected low, but they're so cheap that it looks like they're a value play, but they're probably not. But once you pull some of that noise out, I mean, I can look at the quarterback position, and I can really get a quick feel for who's a good value this week. I mean, just a quick glance, and it's like, you know, I just popped it on, and Jameis Winston, boom, blows everybody out of the water as far as a points per dollar projection value play on DraftKings. And, you know, you go down the list, and you have Dak Prescott right up there, and you have Deshaun Watson up there, and Aaron Rodgers. Basically, a lot of the names that we already discussed on this on this pod, and I do the same thing for all the position groups. And again, sometimes you have to use your eyes and say, I don't know about that. Like, you know, I did this last week and it burned me, but Lamar Miller is being projected a little bit too high for my taste. So I'll just say, no, I don't like it, but I mean, I get it. And then I'll go down that list and see who are players I like that are also projected in a points per dollar basis really well. And hello, Todd Gurley is up there as I'm looking at it right now on DraftKings. Todd Gurley's right up there. So, you know, that confirms, Mitch, what you were saying. One of the sneaky plays that just popped up is I just looked at this. And I kind of forgot to – actually, I'm going to save that for the VIP. I'm not even going to say it.
Attaboy.
Yeah, I'm saving it. I'm saving it because okay. I have a sneaky, sneaky GPP play that no one is talking about this week, and I'm excited for
it. Nice.
Yeah.
You're going to make me listen to that thing.
Saving that for the next one. Yeah, I finally fucking listened to one, man. Damn.
Hey, I've talked to you enough one-on-one all day long.
No, you will listen to it.
I will. I absolutely will this week now. Thanks for that tease.
I'm not saying it. I'm not going to say the player name in Slack or anywhere. You must listen to the VIP pod.
That was even worse. Three quick hitting questions, and we can wrap this thing up and everybody get to bed. Chasing 21, UW81, one of our friends in the Army. So you think avoiding the Green Bay versus Dallas game in GPP is a valid strategy this week? Kevin, you first, then Mitch. Is fading that game a valid GPP strategy?
Listen, I think any time you have a high projected game that's going to be very highly owned and just tons of ownership percentages on it, there is a game theory philosophy that says you can fade this game and see what happens. Now that said, no, I mean, I can't really get behind fading that game. I believe that it's going to go the way that the lines, I think it will play to a very high scoring game. Now, that doesn't mean that you always have to play the high projected game. I would not fade that one this week, but in general, I would say it's always a good idea to get on low ownership in GPPs. So I'm perfectly comfortable. An argument can be made where you say fade the whole game and just see what happens, but I don't see that working this week. Let's put it that way. But I'm okay with generally looking at who's going to be the highest owned plays. I like to do it on a player-by-player basis. It's really tough for me to say for a whole game. But on a player-by-player basis, if we think that, you know, if that game was going to be so hot that Dez Bryant was going to be 70% owned, or 50 or 30%, depending on what slate we're talking about, yeah, I'm comfortable fading anybody in a GPP that's going to be 30 or 40% owned, period. Because I want, you know, as unlikely as it is that that person has a shitty game, if they do, you get such a leg up on the field. And it's really tough to win massive contests, and you need those legs up if you're going to have a chance.
Mitch, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think there's some validity to fading a game like this. However, usually when I want to fade those high-owned games, I want there to be another game that's at least within the same atmosphere as far as the over-under. And this one's just so far ahead of the rest of the games on the week that there's just not another one I want to pivot much of my ownership towards. I'm going to dabble a little bit in the Texans and KC, just because I think that the two offenses might match up a little bit better than people are thinking right now. But I'm not going to be fading the Packers-Cowboys this week.
Okay. At VPatriot says, how do you decipher who is going to be overowned or underowned each week? Mitch, fire it away.
Kevin actually brought up some great points when he was talking about ownership and who he looks at as top values and stuff. Is honestly, when I'm seasoned enough, but I'm able to open up my app, look at the quarterback listing, go look at the over-unders, look at the implied team totals, and I just use Vegas as my compass. And I know a lot of people like to do that. And you can also, in addition to using Vegas as your compass, just pay attention around the industry. You don't have to soak up their information, but you can listen to them, see what they're saying, see what they're highlighting. And, you know, if it's somebody who has a big draw, a big pull, and you know that that's going to push some ownership towards said player, you can go ahead and throw them in the chalk category and use that to your advantage.
Good enough for me. Kevin, how do you go through deciphering ownership?
I mean, same things. I actually look in there are some obvious plays. When our projections, for example, are blaring out a particular player as a massive value play for the week, you can. The field isn't stupid, and that's the one thing that people need to wrap their head around. We're not playing against morons. The as moronic as, you know, some comments I sometimes see in public forums about DFS are, and they are very, very, very much so that way. In general, the field is fairly sharp. They're aware of who's a value. They're aware of what the Vegas totals and team totals are for each game. So I don't think it's that hard to try to figure out who everybody's going to be on a given week. Now, part of the deal with being a DFS Army member, VIP member, and this and that, is we're going to put you on the chalk. I mean, like, I want to know who the chalk is. And so those are your cash plays. When you look at we're trying to get on the chalk. We're not, for our cash games, our hybrids, we're trying to be on the chalk, right? It's not a bad thing. There's way too much of this idea that if a player is high-owned, that's something that's bad. It's not bad. There's a reason they're high owned, because they're in a great spot and they're doing well and they have a lot of good things going for them. So I want to be on the high owned players in my cash lineups and in the majority of what I'm doing. My tournament lineups are there specifically to kind of hedge against that and try to win a big contest by being a little freaky. But in my cash games, I want to know who the high ownership guys are. And again, I'll just look around the initial, like earlier I was talking about, Adam Humphreys, right? And the reason I know, I keep hearing his name in reference to the two-game slate, and like everybody's on him, and he had this, and you look at his stat line from last week, and it was pretty good. I mean, it's the same reason I was off Chris Thompson in the first part of the two-game slate. It's like everybody's talking about Chris Thompson, and here's this volatile player. He's been on this team for 2 years. He had six big games over the course of 2 years, and all of a sudden he's expensive and everybody's playing him 50-60% ownership. I'm like, hell no. Even the first week when I didn't play him and he was 60% owned and he went off, I accepted that. And going in, I said, you know what, knowing that he's 60% owned, I'm happy I don't have much of him. And week two of another primetime slate that he was in, because for whatever reason the Redskins were in primetime slates 2 weeks in a row, week two of that, I said, I am touching this motherfucker, and I had zero shares of him this week for good reason. And I told everybody, you know, that's the guy you want to fade, because he wound up 60% on and he put up a three. And if you faded him, you have a leg up against the field that is almost insurmountable for anybody else. That's the stuff. So high-owned isn't a bad thing, unless it's a high-owned player that really shouldn't be high-owned, and that's what we're trying to decipher and stay away from. I would say that Higgins guy, when he came out week two, was the perfect example of somebody we should have been completely off. Everybody was talking about him. What team is that? The Rams or the
it's the Browns.
The Browns, right? Everybody's talking about this guy. He was the punt of the week. He was cheap. It was like 4,000. He got 7 targets in the previous game. Everybody was talking about this guy, and the Browns ended up having a big game, but not one pass. Reception for the Higgins guy. So that's the kind of guy that we want to be aware of, because I saw every tout talking about him. When he shows up in like Levitan's leverage column, you know, at that point everybody's on him. And like he, as a cash play, like some first week guy. So that was a play to fade. That was one of those scenarios where you should be like, oh, let's be sharp and just not play any shares of this guy because fuck it, too many people are talking about this scrub. And that's, you know, he'll be owned way too much for who he is and what he's never done before in the NFL.
Here's a quick question to wrap the night up. This one comes from at Mr. Harris 1. Who, I'll ask Kevin this one, and then Mitch, I'm pretty sure you're going to agree. Who has the higher ceiling this week, Golden Tate or T.Y. Hilton?
The higher ceiling? I mean, T.Y. Hilton is a higher ceiling player than Golden Tate, week in and week out.
Agreed.
There we go. But see, I would say the same thing. Tate just isn't used in the red zone that much. T.Y. has the bigger long break, you know, capabilities, whereas Golden Tate's average run per route is like 2.4 yards or something crazy like that. So, naturally, you've got the higher floor probably with Golden Tate, but the higher ceiling with T.Y. Hilton.
T.Y.'s got that home field magic, too, going for him. Use him this week. That, in GPP only.
That ought to bring this one home, guys. That was fun. The Q&A was fun at the end. We powered through those games pretty good for a record pace, especially for a three-man pod. I look forward to doing it again next week.
Awesome, yeah, guys. Absolutely. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely, Mitch. Anytime. Kevin, you want to wrap this one off and send us back with some bring-it-home music, or are you going to go musicless from here on out?
Unfortunately, I have to go musicless because I'm being told that if we put any music on the directly in the podcast, that Podbean will not allow us to upload or something, so I'm going to actually not put it in, and we will have to go with our DFS Army theme. But I'm super excited. So, again, if you've made it all the way to the end, awesome. Thank you for being with us for week 5 of the fantasy football season. Don't forget to sign up as a DFS Army VIP member at the DFSArmy.com website. And if you want to ask me questions, if you want to talk, if you want to see Geeks Picks, if you want to talk to Mitch and Chop and go over all these and just have access to a lot of sharp people who spend a lot of time researching this stuff and sharing it with our team, and we do consider ourselves a team and a family in the DFS Army, get in there, and you know, I look forward to talking to y'all.
Sounds good, guys. We'll see you next week.
All right.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA. Weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get 2 free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.